How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
Raptors kick it out for an open look for three. A Canadian three for Corey Joseph. And the Raptors' lead is 15-117-102 with 3:44 to play.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for a Friday. The NBA Finals Game 1 is a blowout. Why should we be concerned, and is it part of a 7-game series or a 4-game series? We'll talk about all that, plus we'll continue the search for a point guard with Locked On Raptors' Sean Woodley as the Jazz go after Corey Joseph. That's up today on Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope things are going great for you. Today's show is brought to you by my friends at Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Blake and the crew, always a pleasure to be involved with them. And I'm currently driving the Hyundai Santa Fe. Super impressed by the experience. Took it down to St. George for my daughter's golf weekend. And comfortable drive on a long drive like that. This great room, great comfort, smooth ride. Really, really impressed. And then good gas mileage. I think I got about 29 miles a gallon on that. So if you're looking for a car and you're in the market, if it's a sedan and you're about to do the Honda Accord or the Toyota Camry or something like that, make sure you take a second and run over to Murdoch Hyundai and check out what they've got on the Sonata and see whether or not you can get as many bells, any whistles as you like to drive, and the price will be incredible. Maybe it's the Elantra that's your answer. And then if you're looking for the little SUVs, it's the Tucson or the Santa Fe. And the Santa Fe is not little. It's got two rows of seats, but it's got a lot of room back there for that trip we were able to fill and had no problem filling everything up. So it's the Murdoch family is going to give you a wonderful experience with all the Murdoch signatures, whether it's the service center, extra hours, whether it's the car washes, the oil changes, all the signatures of what a Murdoch experience is. And you can get that at 4646 South State Street with Murdoch Hyundai. They also have a location in Logan and in Linden for you. Stop on by, check it out. You'll be surprised, I think. I was on how the high quality of the Hyundai brand and as well, just the price for what you're getting is just remarkable. Softball practice the other day, everybody's kind of looking at the car and taking it in and realizing what you could get for it. It was kind of awesome. So anyway, that's they're our sponsor today. Appreciate them very, very much. Let's get into we'll do NBA Finals talk, and then we'll continue on the series of searching for a point guard. I don't know what your opinion is, but Goran Dragic on Tuesdays with Wes Goldberg of Locked On Heat seemed like it was going to be a tough deal to get done. Kellen Olson, Locked On Suns, there was a deal there. Are you giving up Exum for Bledsoe? Are you willing to do that? And then yesterday with Locked On Zachary Bennett, Locked On Wolves, Trey Lyles possibility, going to cost you to get Ricky Rubio. Are these guys driving their market higher than the real market? I kind of doubt it. I think the message so far is it's been fairly painful. And I think if none of those deals are accomplished, then I think the next task or the next step in the process is you go talk to Toronto for Corey Joseph, who's solid but not awesome, and see whether you need to probably get something done. So curious to hear your thoughts on this process, what you've learned in this process with that. We'll do that. We'll finish it up coming here with Woodley. NBA Finals game number one breakdown here. First and foremost, a big picture thought I had during the game. The entire game felt to me as though the Warriors were about to run away. I was watching with my daughter. I kept saying, it's about to be 17, it's about to be 20. And at halftime, when it wasn't, and it was only 7, my thought was, wow, the Cavaliers are unbelievably great to have kept this game at 7. And my feeling was I'd seen the Warriors play that half of basketball and be up 20 so many times. And on this time, the Cavaliers had kept them to 7. It made me believe we might have a game. And then the opposite happened. Then the Warriors just blitzed them in the third quarter. The Warriors in the past have had a tendency to blink for a moment or two. They did the exact opposite. They never blinked for 1 minute, lost focus in this game, and they were truly, truly awesome. Second one that jumped out, or now let's go to the micro level. Durant's a game changer. We knew it. We've known it all year. To watch it happen in person there, it's a game changer. Whether it's the behind-the-back pull-up jumper on the right side, whether it's the three with Tristan Thompson flying at him, whether it's 7-1 leading the break, he's an entire game changer. I mean, if Klay Thompson is as off as he seems to be and they don't have Kevin Durant, they might be in trouble. Instead, Durant is just such a dominant force. He was the best player on the floor by a large margin last night. The whole premise of Cleveland being able to stay in this series is that LeBron's supposed to be the best player on the floor. And there's just no way to combat the Warriors if Durant is at the level he was last night, and he has been that way for 5 or 6 years. I mean, this is why I've made the comment that he may be the second best small forward of all time. I understand exactly who Larry Bird is. I'm not ignorant to that. But this is one of the great scorers we've ever had at 7-1 with a skill set that's unequaled. The fast break dunks that he's getting seem very strange, unless you kind of understand two things are taking place. One is because the Warriors switch so much defensively, the minute they get a rebound and go, if you're J.R. Smith and you're supposed to be guarding Steph Curry, Steph Curry has switched off of you and now has switched to two other guys. And as you go in transition and you're being taught, mark up on Curry, Curry's my guy, and you're sprinting back, you're just trying to find Steph. He's not next to you because they've switched defensively. You're just trying to find him somewhere. So then when you're backpedaling, looking, and you've got Durant coming at you and Steph's open on the right wing, you do have a tendency to go to Steph. He's your guy. And it looks ridiculous because of the fact that you go and dunk, have Durant dunk on you. It looks just ridiculous. But it actually makes some sense. It's the play we talked about a little bit yesterday where Pachulia gets the dunk. Some of that is the same thing we saw with Durant with those dunks, is you're running out to your shooters, and it's just almost impossible to guard. Another micro issue. 50-50 balls, whether it was rebounds, whether it was just loose balls. I saw LeBron get one, but the Warriors got about every 50-50 ball. There's two ways to look at that. One, I don't really believe in, is that, well, they're playing harder. And the other is they're more athletic, they're longer, they're faster, so they're getting every 50-50 ball. That's the way I look at it. And that's what was telling to me, particularly on the Cavaliers' offensive glass. Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love had almost no ability to get the offensive rebounds that they have to get to change the series and slow the Warriors down from running because they just weren't athletic enough to go get the ball. 50-50 balls went all Warriors, and it's because of speed and things of that nature. The second one, or the third micro item, was the Cavaliers bench, which actually isn't when the game got blown out, but this is still relevant for the series, looked crazy slow. Darren Williams, Kyle Korver lineup looked, Richard Jefferson looked crazy slow. against the Warriors. That's going to be a problem before the series is over. Korver and Williams looked terrible, didn't make their shots, which makes you look terrible. That's an area where I think people had hoped that the Cavaliers would be able to stay in games. That one, from a long-lasting standpoint of the series, did not look that way, and I would say was pretty disconcerting if you're looking at it from a Cavaliers perspective. The final one is the amount of shots the Warriors got in and around the basket. Just truly incredible how much they got in and around the basket. When we, if you go and take a look at the shot charts, and I talked about this yesterday, that the Warriors were the number one restricted area shooting team in the league, and the Cavaliers were number two. The Warriors in the first quarter took 18 shots in the restricted area. In the first quarter, 18 of their 32 shots were in the restricted area. They only hit 10 of 18, but that's a sign that Cleveland's defensive discipline is just not good enough to be able to handle what the Warriors are bringing at them. And I don't know whether I think that's going to change coming forward. In the second quarter, they had 16 shots in the restricted area. That's the half circle underneath the basket. They were 9 of 16. The Warriors, in the second quarter, were 0 of 6 from 3 and 0 of 6 from the mid-range and still led at halftime by 7. The second quarter, the Warriors were 0 of 6 from mid-range, 0 of 6 from 3, and still led. But that's largely because they took 34 shots in the first half in the restricted area. That's incredible. Third quarter, when they blow the game out, it changes a tad that they start to make shots. In the third quarter, they only go to the restricted area 4 times, and they now start to bang down shots. They hit 6 of 9 from 3 and 2 of 4 from the mid-range. But this is the essence of why the Warriors are so great. Because the Cavaliers probably, if we went back and watched, made a defensive adjustment to take away the 34 shots in the restricted area in the first half and then got burned from the outside. The Warriors were just brilliant. I would say that this has happened before. I thought the LeBron big small pick and roll that they went to when they played Love at the center looked effective, and we'll probably see more of that. But game one, Durant, big picture, the Warriors were on the verge of a blowout the whole time. Only the greatness of the Cavaliers delayed it. Durant, 50-50 balls, Cavs bench, and Cavs are just not a fundamental defensive team to be able to deal with what the Warriors are throwing at them. All right, that's my take on the NBA Finals. Let's continue with our series on searching for a point guard, and we do it with Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors. Again, today's show brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. The Murdoch Santa Fe I'm driving right now is really quite a nice car, enjoying it very, very much. Would strongly suggest you at least adding Hyundai to your list of cars that if you're looking for a new car and checking out what they have to offer, all the things you get for the money, and I think you'll be really pleased, and then go take it for a drive and make sure it matches to what you want. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I think you should certainly include it in your list of things. Let's continue with our final stop on the series of point guard search for the Jazz, and then you can tell me which one you would do. So Sean Woodley joins us, Locked On Raptors. Now, Kyle Lowry's a free agent. University of Utah, DeLon Wright's playing well, and Corey Joseph is on the roster. Am I accurate, Sean, as I call about the Raptors, that you cannot keep all three guys?
I'm not sure that's entirely true because, I mean, we saw this season and, you know, going forward, if the Raptors are to keep Kyle Lowry, you know, it doesn't hurt to have that kind of depth on the roster to be able to have guys who can be capable backups, you know, come in and fill in starters roles. Like, it's nice to have those guys. The Raptors got really lucky this year, being able to have DeLon Wright to come in. You know, he missed the first part of the season, but when he came in and then started to fill in when Kyle Lowry was out, like, it was really effective, and it helped the Raptors go 14-7 without Lowry. Of course, there's an inherent issue if you're building in the idea of, like, maybe Lowry isn't that durable into the idea of bringing him back, but I'm not sure you have to get rid of them, but I am kind of the mind that if the Raptors are going to try to sort of move some of the salary off their books to try to keep the most important free agents they have in Kyle Lowry and Serge Ibaka, and then maybe PJ Tucker or Patrick Patterson after that, then Corey Joseph for me becomes like a pretty easy guy to potentially move. There are bigger contracts on the roster with Jonas Valanciunas and Damari Carroll, but Joseph probably is the easiest to move just in terms of being able to get something back and also being able to get rid of his, you know, what's going to be an expiring contract because he's got a player option at the end of this year and he's pretty underpaid for what he does as a player. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessary, you know, per se to just like you have to move him just for the sake of moving them. But I think, yeah, Joseph is a really easy candidate to talk yourself into trading this offseason.
All right. Was DeLon Wright good enough that you're comfortable with him as your backup point guard moving forward?
I think so. There's some issues. Like his shooting is not there. Like he doesn't really have any sort of off the dribble game, and neither does Corey Joseph. But Joseph at least started to hit some some catch and shoot threes this season, and that was really effective. Whereas DeLon doesn't really have a three pointer in his game whatsoever. It's odd. He doesn't really get any lift on his shot. He's almost like he's taking a free throw every time he takes a three. That's like the one sort of bugaboo I have about Wright's game. But overall, Wright's defense, like, he was much better than Joseph was for the most part this season on D, and just it's kind of obvious. He's 6'5", he's athletic, and he kind of blows up a lot of plays with his length, and that's nice to have. And so I think overall, while he doesn't shoot very well, I think Wright, you know, everything else he does definitely fits the profile of a really good backup. So you know, I'd have no problem if he was the backup. Plus, the Raptors have Fred VanVleet on the roster too, who, you know, probably isn't going to be anything more than a third-string point guard or a backup at best. But it's nice to have him there too, and it's a little bit more insurance. The one thing that this whole sort of point guard conversation is an issue. The issue that this whole thing presents for the Raptors is the order in which things are going to happen this year, because you have the issue with when the free agency happens, and just sort of like you have Kyle Lowry's free agency you're dealing with in the off season in July, where you have the draft, which is probably the best chance to trade one of these guys, whether you're trading Joseph or whoever. Like, the draft is when you're probably going to do that, but you're doing that without any assurance that Lowry's going to be back. So it's hard to decide when they're going to do it, but if you're going to make the risk, if you think you have a good shot of bringing back Lowry, I would say for sure, trading Corey Joseph makes sense. And DeLon Wright is, you know, he's probably ready to be a full-time backup. Yeah.
What is the feeling on whether you have a chance to re-sign Kyle Lowry?
I think it's pretty good. I think if the Raptors give him that fifth year, it's pretty much a guarantee. It's the last time he's going to get paid. So it totally makes sense for the Raptors, for him to accept that fifth year. It makes less sense for the Raptors to give it to him because he's 31 and he's going to be 36 by the end of that deal, and it could look pretty bad the last couple of seasons. But the way I've been talking myself into the fifth year is that, you know, expiring contracts are going to become a thing again. They're going to become an asset again with the cap sort of smoothing out here. And I think that last season of Lowry's deal, that's going to be pretty attractive to a team if they're looking to, you know, open up a bunch of cap space going forward. And it becomes hard to trade it or whatever, but I think, you know, 5 years down the road, that might be a bit of an asset, whereas it doesn't quite feel like an onerous five-year deal if that last year isn't expiring and it actually is going to mean something. I still think, like, I would put my money on Lowry coming back. There aren't a ton of situations where it seems to make a lot of sense for him to sign if he's looking to, you know, both mix winning and getting a big contract. Like the Spurs, for example, like they have to open up a bunch of cap space and they seem focused on Chris Paul first off anyway. You have like the Rockets, they're an interesting team. I'm not sure Lowry would want to go back there. And then you have the Sixers, and I'm just not sure they're going to be ready to win even if they get Lowry next year. So I think just everything's coming together where if the Raptors give Lowry the 5 years, or even if they give him the max over 4 years, which is still more than any other team can give him, I think it just makes the most sense for him to come back to a situation that maybe is kind of blocked by LeBron in the Eastern Conference, but is still a winning situation. So I think that it's going to end up most likely with Lowry coming back. I'm kind of getting more and more confident as the days go by here, and maybe that's irrational, but I just think it makes the most sense for both sides to bring him back.
What you just talked about is a fascinating thing in this, and it impacts the Jazz a little bit with George Hill, which impacts, you know, this whole idea of the Jazz trying to find a point guard, this whole series we're doing. The point guard market's fascinating because mm-hmm. the two, number one and two in most people's mind is Lowry and Drew Holiday, if they leave their teams, neither of their teams have the financial wherewithal to sign another point guard.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're George Hill or you're some of these other point guards, if Lowry goes to – and Chris Paul – sorry, Chris Paul, Kyle Lowry, and Drew Holiday. If Chris Paul leaves and goes to San Antonio, the Clippers don't have enough money to fill – they're already out paying it. They don't have – like, they're done. Like, they now move mm-hmm. into a different realm. The Raptors, if Kyle Lowry goes and signs in Philadelphia or – which really it's Philadelphia or Brooklyn. There's not a lot of good teams with cap space other than Boston – then all of a sudden Toronto doesn't have enough money to sign Drew Holiday. And if Drew Holiday goes to Brooklyn, then all of a sudden there's not any, right? Like you just, yeah. There aren't the pieces don't move. And then suddenly George Hill has very limited marketplace, maybe LA for something limited. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thing. Now, if Lowry stays, Holiday stays, Chris Paul stays, now all of a sudden George Hill's sitting around saying, all right, who's paying me what?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, inertia is a powerful force. Like, I think that's why it's going to end up that I think Lowry, Holiday, and Paul will probably all stay where they are just because, A, the money will talk, and, B, like, it's just really hard for teams to justify letting them walk because there's no real backup plan. Like, the Raptors will be totally out in the woods if they let Lowry walk, and then they're going into a season with Corey Joseph and DeLon Wright as their 1 and 2 point guards, which is a lot less attractive. That's kind of my thinking there as well, and why I'm more coming around to the idea that I think Lowry's going to stay, and I think most of these guys will stay, and I think that's probably just going to be what we see throughout the NBA going forward as well. Like, I'm not sure we're going to see as much player movement as we used to.
All right, let's go to Corey Joseph, the player. Who is he? What's he capable of? Could he lead a Western Conference playoff team? If the Jazz were looking for a point guard, is Corey Joseph a legitimate answer for a year for the Jazz as a stopgate?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, he's not better than George Hill. He's definitely, if the idea is to replace Joseph replace George Hill with Joseph, like, I think that's a definite downgrade. Joseph is just kind of like a really perfect backup point guard. Like, he doesn't do the things that you need from a starter in today's NBA. Like, he's not a big high volume scorer. He gets to the basket a ton, but like, he's not going to create his own pull up looks or anything like that. And even as like a playmaker, he kind of has this sort of thing where when he drives to the basket, he's mostly just looking for his own shot. Like, he's not great when it comes to driving kicks. So if you're trying to, you know, have that be a big part of your offense, like, Joseph's not a great guy to do that. This season, his defense was kind of up and down. He, you know, used to be so good. Like, last season, he was just unbelievable where he would just fight through every screen, stay in front of his guys, and just be a pest to everybody. This year, it was a little bit more up and down. And he really sort of picked it up when Kyle Lowry got hurt and he was put in the starting role. So that was good to see that he could do it there. He was really clutch for the Raptors this year, just in terms of when he decided to play well. Like, overall, again, I think Joseph's just like a really quintessential perfect backup point guard that you want to have behind anybody, really. He can come in, he can capably run your offense, he's not going to turn the ball over. The fact that he's added a catch and shoot three is really nice, and it's a big part of his game. And he shot about 36% this season. I think there's probably room for growth there. His form is fine. He's always been a good mid-range shooter and free throw shooter as well, so maybe he can improve that some. But yeah, in terms of like upside, like, Corey Joseph, I think, has kind of gotten to what he's going to be. I don't see a lot more of development from him. I mean, he's what, 25, 26 at this point. Like, he's probably pretty much plateaued as to what he's going to be for a 1 year stopgap. If you think, like, you know, Dante Exum is going to be, you know, the next great starting point guard for the Jazz, and you're okay with the Jazz taking a year where they're maybe going to take a step back, or they're going to rely more on a Gordon Hayward or someone like that to create offense, then maybe you can get away with it. Like, I think he's better than Shelvin Mack and Raul Neto. So that, like, that would be an upgrade over those guys. But yeah, if you're looking at him to be a replacement for George Hill, should George Hill leave, like, that's probably not ideal, but like, you could do a lot worse than Corey Joseph at $7 million on your roster.
Well, let me sell it for a second. All right. And tell me if you think I'm crazy. So He's your starting point guard. He does defend. The catch and shoot thing you're talking about is real. He hit 47% of catch and shoot threes this last year.
Mm-hmm.
The Jazz play an equal opportunity offense where Gordon Hayward has the ball as much as Rodney Hood has the ball, as much as the point guard has the ball. So he suddenly gets, he's really being used as a pick and roll catch and shoot guy more than a traditional point guard. He defends fairly well. He's only $7 million. And it frankly opens up the door a little bit for Dante Exum to still develop and not be blocked, because Dante maybe suddenly plays 25 minutes a night. And finally, and most importantly, the deal to get him done might be as simple as Boris Diaw and his contract, which can be moved for Corey Joseph. Or it could simply be a second-round pick for Corey Joseph. There's no cost. Like, no offense to Corey Joseph, Toronto is in such a financial bind that the Jazz, if they do it before July 1, it's a cap space game where they just take Corey Joseph into cap space. If it's post-July 1, it's Boris Diaw's contract that Toronto then releases him, and there's no cost. I mean, it's a no-cost acquisition, unless you're going to tell me you think Toronto's really going to hold out for something.
Yeah, that's the thing when it comes back to what I said at the start, where I'm not sure the Raptors are going to be in a rush to trade Corey Joseph, because there are other guys in the roster they could offload to provide themselves more salary cap flexibility. So I'm not sure, like, they're going to just say, all right, a second-round pick, and, like, let's just be done with him and move on from that $7 million. I have no idea. Like, it's so hard to gauge what the Raptors want to do. They're so tight-lipped as an organization. There's really never any, you know, inkling as to what they're going to do. But the thing with Masai Ujiri is that he's never going to deal from a position of weakness. And I feel like he's always going to try to get the maximum possible value. And I'm just not sure he would settle for a second rounder. I think in that case, he would just look at it and say, all right, I'd just rather have Corey Joseph on my team, even if there's a bit of a logjam at point guard, or even if I need to, you know, get rid of some money elsewhere. I'm not sure he's going to, you know, just take a loss on a trade. That's just kind of how he's operated over the course of his time with the Raptors. You could get it for a second-round pick, probably. Even, like, if the Jazz are looking to trade their late first-round pick, like, maybe that works as well. The Jazz have their first-round pick this year, right?
We have 24 and 30, so.
Okay, yeah. So maybe if maybe 30 gets it done, something like that.
All right, maybe, you got to help me out here. Are the Raptors not in nearly as big a bind as I think they are? Like, I think they're financially screwed.
Here's the thing is that, you know, Masai Ujiri seems to have the green light to pay any luxury tax he wants, like, that he wants to. Like, if he wants to, go into the tax and bring back the entire band, I think he has the green light from that. Like, the Raptors' ownership, for people who don't know, like, the Raptors aren't owned by a single person. They're owned by, like, a telecommunications conglomerate, and actually two of them. There's just the two big telecommunications companies in Canada that own the Raptors and the Maple Leafs and a bunch of other teams. They just have, like, an endless stream of money. So I don't think they have any.
I'm calling total bull crap here. Here's why. I love you. You know this, right? Here's why. You signed Kyle Lowry for 35. Mm-hmm. You signed Serge for 20, right?
Yep.
You're at $133 million.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to have a problem with that.
$12 million over the salary cap, and you've let Patrick Patterson, PJ Tucker go.
Yeah, I honestly don't think money is going to be an object here. Like, I think the Raptors have done enough over the last little while here where Masai's got pretty much – I'm not sure they're going to pay that. Like, I don't think they will. I think they'll probably try to offload Damari Carroll somehow, whether that's attaching an asset or something like that, or they're going to try to find the market for Jonas Valanciunas if it's not there. And maybe they will just have to, you know, bite the bullet and trade Corey Joseph for very little. But, I'm not sure money is going to be an issue with this team. And there's the issue of, like, if you go into the luxury tax, like, you're hamstringing yourself and you're locking yourself into a team that probably has a ceiling. But that might be the best-case scenario right now while LeBron continues to be LeBron. So I think the green light is there for Masai to pay anything. And if it means bringing back Corey Joseph and figuring it out later, like, Corey Joseph only has 1 year left on his deal. But yeah, it is possible that they could just trade him for a second rounder and move on from that money. I just think there's bigger contract.
Isn't luxury tax 2.0
to trade first?
Isn't luxury tax 2.2 to 1?
I think so. But like I said, the money that comes into the two companies that own the Raptors and the Maple Leafs, it is endless. And I just don't think they really care. It's not like it's one guy who's paying for everything. It's, you know, it's a weird ownership structure that I kind of don't really understand how everything works, but there's endless money coming in, and it's different than I think any other team in maybe even professional sports, the way it works. But I really don't think money is going to be an obstacle for the Raptors as they try to build this team.
Well, I tell you what, this is why we have the local angles on Locked on Raptors, because that's a perspective that By the way, it's 1 to 1.5 for the first 5 million, 1 to 1.75 for the next 5 million, 2.5 for the next 10 million. So if you're at 33, the 2 million, each of the $2 million you're paying over the 121 luxury tax, so 12 for those final 2 million, you're paying 2.5 to the one. I don't care how rich your ownership is. They're avoiding that 2 million. It might not mean trading Corey Joseph to save the 11 or 12 million we've been talking about. Interesting, really interesting perspective. Appreciate the time. Great job with Locked On Raptors. Sean does a great job if you want to follow that show and keep us up to date. Super local angle on it. Appreciate the knowledge. Thanks very much, Sean.
Absolutely. Take care, David.
That is Locked On Jazz today, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.